I'm Steve Clark with Dr. Art Evans, entomologist, and this is What's Bugging You.
We're joined today by Dr. John Cooley. John, tell us how you got interested in cicadas.
Well, I grew up in Kansas City, and we had an awful lot of cicadas there every summer. And as a kid, I just liked going out in the front yard and watching them and playing with them and see what they did.
How did you turn it into the research project that you're involved with today?
Many years later, when I was in graduate school, I got interested in them again and realized that there was an awful lot about them that we just didn't know. My graduate school roommate and I decided to throw some things in the car and go down and have a look at the periodical cicadas that were coming out in Virginia back in 1995.
All right. And what brood was that?
That was brood one.
Okay.
So for you folks in Virginia, that's the one that came out last year over in the Shenandoah Valley.
And what did you find?
You know, the most remarkable thing was right off the bat, we found something that wasn't in any of the literature about periodical cicadas. What we found was that females also make signals.
Really?
Now, cicadas are famous for the loud male sounds. Males are flying around and making all this noise, but nobody really understood what the females did. And we discovered that, in fact, what they do is they signal back.
Really? How did you find that out?
We separated the cicadas by sex and kept them in cages apart from each other so they couldn't mate, and then we watched them very carefully. It just kind of clicked one day. That's a bad joke. You can't say that. It kind of came together one day that we were looking in the cages, and I think it was Dave who spotted this, that every time a male would call, a female would twitch her wings, and that was the signal.
Oh, okay.
So we call it a wing click or a wing flick signal.
Well, then you've developed this website. Tell us about what you set out to do and the partnerships you developed. And it seems to me there's a solid component there that involves citizen science.
Yeah, and actually it has from the very beginning, and that's the origins of the website. Every spring back in graduate school, the phone would ring off the hook when people would call in wanting more information about periodical cicadas, because almost every year they come out somewhere in the eastern U.S., being enterprising graduate students back in the beginning of websites, we decided, hey, we'll set up a website. Maybe that'll mean we won't have to answer the phone so much. So the first website was at the University of Michigan, and I think it's still up. It's kind of an archived website. And from there, the websites have grown and moved around. What we've done now with the website is we're soliciting citizen scientists to send us reports of periodical cicadas, because over the years, our interests in these insects have changed a little bit, and one of the things that we've really wanted to do is update the emergence maps of periodical cicadas. So the maps that we've been working from really date from the 19th century. They're out of date. The criteria used to make them are unclear. We need to update those maps, and we're doing it by going out ourselves and by getting help from the public.
Well, how does the public contribute to your research?
Actually, and again, this is one of those funny stories where it's very fitting, those very earliest maps of periodical cicadas were made by people in the Department of Agriculture, sending out postcards to county extension agents, and the extension agents would send reports back into Washington, and those would all be compiled, and other people would send reports in as well, and these would be compiled into maps. We really have just updated that, and what we're asking people to do is if they spot periodical cicadas, to go into the website and tell us where they saw them. And then that shows up in a map, and we can take a look at that map and decide where to concentrate our efforts. To give you an example, last year, Brood 1, if you look at the old maps, it's reported to be in the Shenandoah Valley. We started getting an awful lot of reports from Ohio. They were very scattered, and a number of reports from down in Tennessee. And so we actually sent people out to have a look at those and figure out what was going on. And we did find a few interesting things about that.
What can our listeners here in Virginia contribute to your research? What specific things or specific areas do you hope to get information from?
If you look at the maps of periodical cicadas, you can see that the different broods fit together an awful lot like puzzle pieces. The question is that just the way those old maps were made, or is that actually how the broods fit together? So we're especially interested in the edges. And if you look at brood 2, it shares a lot of edge with other periodical cicada broods. In particular, up by Lynchburg, it's going to share an edge with brood 1. We don't exactly know where. We did find out last year that brood 1 actually comes up and over the Blue Ridge. So it's going to be quite fascinating to see, west of Lynchburg, where does Brood 2 go? Do they overlap? Do they touch? What happens? Down in Roanoke, there's a very complicated edge that we found for brood one. The question we have now this year is, does brood two come right up and fit into that like a puzzle? Or is there something else that explains the patterns that we see?
Well, I noticed that most of brood two, the existing map, seems to exist west of the 95 corridor. Do you expect to see much activity, say, in the Richmond area or east of I-95, or who knows?
I think it's fair to say that there will be some activity in those areas. There are certainly historical records from those areas. I think what I would say about that, and if you're looking at the old maps and you think you're near brood 2, but you think, well, maybe I don't really have it because it's not shown on the old maps, I wouldn't really put too much stock in that level of detail in the old maps. It is true that one of the things that's going to be happening between Richmond and Washington is somehow brood 2 gets around or over, or it jumps over brood 10. And brood 10 is a brood that's known to be right in Washington, D.C., right in the metro area. So somehow there's a very, very complicated boundary that it shares with brood 2. We don't know how that works. And the maps that you see up there, they don't have enough detail to fill us in on that.
Well, I look forward to directing our listeners to contribute directly to your research. How about joining us again next week?
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Excellent.